Good morning. Today is Friday, November 13th, 2015. The time is now 10:43. And I am Alicia Washington, Chair of the Concealed Pistol Licensing Review Board, or the CPLRB. We are gathered at 441 4th Street Northwest, Suite 540 South. Present are the following members of the CPLRB: Dr. Nicole Johnson, Laura Ingersoll, Pia Carlson, Gary Abreck, and myself, Alicia Washington. We have a quorum. All in favor of convening today's meeting of the CPLRB, please say aye.
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 The meeting and agenda were posed in accordance with the Open Meetings Act and adopted by the board. Prior to entering into closed session, we are gathered here to discuss an issue that has been brought before the board, or that the board has raised, that we felt needed further discussion with respect to Rule 1202.3F of the rules. So at this time, I would open up the discussion on the rule, and in particular, I will just read into the record the rule, which states,
what's the paragraph again?
It's 1202.3F. It deals with 1202.3 says the appeal need not follow any specific format, although blank forms may be created and made available by the board. An appeal should contain the following information, and subsection F states all written materials that the appellate wishes the board to consider at any hearing. Part of what has been occurring in cases has been that when the appellant files for their request for an appeal, they will submit additional materials that were not initially submitted with the application, so that the Metropolitan Police Department did not have an opportunity in those cases to review them. And the question is whether or not the board should consider those additional materials or not consider those additional materials because they were not supplied with the original application. So I will open it up to the board for discussion on whether or not we should accept those materials.
This is Laura Ingersoll. The subsection F specifies that the appellant may submit, quote, written materials that the appellant wishes the board to consider at any hearing. It seems that that verbiage contemplates that we first make a determination whether there should be a hearing. And if so, we would then move to consider the written materials, but that the written materials submitted by the appellant, not having been before MPD at the time MPD made its determination, aren't to be considered in our decision whether to grant a hearing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that in the first instance, we would determine whether there is a... there are matters in dispute that, quote, appear to be, that a contested case hearing is appropriate for resolution of the appeal. Then we issue a notice of hearing, and then in connection with that hearing, examine and review and consider the written materials, but that our decision on whether to go summary disposition, in other words, our review of the MPD decision, is independent of the additional materials. It seems inappropriate for us to essentially be initiating de novo, entirely from the beginning, a review of what in effect is a new application or by the appellant for his concealed carry license. We would, in effect, by considering those additional materials, we're putting ourselves in the position of the chief to assess whether those materials are now sufficient to support the application, and that that is not the role of this board.
I agree. With my reading of the of that subsection would indicate that it would not be appropriate. I'm sorry, this is Alicia Washington speaking. It would not be appropriate for the board at that time to consider the additional materials other than for the limited purpose, or the, I guess the question is whether or not we should consider referring the case or remanding the case back to the chief to consider those additional materials so that we're not making a decision on the additional materials, but we may look at it for the limited purpose of whether or not to send it back to the chief for further consideration.
I guess my, this is Laura Ingersoll, I guess my based upon the discussions we've had at prior meetings in struggling with this issue on a case-by-case basis, it seems that that puts us in the position of being another bite of the apple for an appellant who has, in his initial application, failed to provide the chief with sufficient material, with the materials the appellant wishes to provide, and that it puts us in the position of dictating to the chief what to do, and it puts the chief in the position of not being able to achieve finality in her determination based on the materials initially supplied by the applicant, so that it sort of becomes a circular process that's highly inefficient. I think the regulations, as posted by the MPD and as contained in the law and the regs, are very clear about what type of showing an application has to make in order to satisfy or in order to make a sufficient case before the chief, understanding that the specific level of showing hasn't been established yet in this jurisdiction. But in a number of cases, the materials that have been provided to us as the board have been substantially more detailed than was provided to the chief, and that just doesn't seem either efficient or fair. It seems to me the applicant has to make his most powerful and detailed and substantive showing to the authority who has in the first instance the authority to grant a concealed carry license, that's MPD, and that if there's a quarrel over the facts or the interpretation of those facts, then we are the next resort.
I guess that's the, yes, you're right, we are the next resort. So then at what point would the appellant be able to provide additional information in order for them to be able to make their case? So in other words, you know, generally, when you fill out an application, that doesn't necessarily, I don't know if the regulations are as clear that you have to put everything forth at that time, including witnesses and, you know, signed under oath and that type of evidence at the time of the application, particularly when there's built into the statute or the rules the process of review, reviewing the chief's decision. So the question then is, at what point would the applicant be able to provide that additional information to support their initial request?
It seems to me that if the appeal, that the appeal should be kind of analogous to a judicial appeal, the appeal should be based on the record below, supplemented by argument and fleshing out of that record, but not a whole new category of substantive information, which is what's happened here. We've been receiving materials that simply were not considered, weren't even before MPD. So that the place for putting forward one's sort of the facts to support the application should be in the initial application. And then if there's a need to, for example, if the police chief were to say that a particular assertion of monetary value of items carried by an individual in the course of his work, assertion is made by the applicant, MPD says insufficient under good and proper reason, matter comes before us. The applicant then has an opportunity to bring forth witnesses, affidavits, to substantiate the factual assertion, I carry items of value on me. But that initial assertion has to be made to MPD. Shouldn't be made in the first instance to this board in the course of the appeal. And it's only in the context of the hearing that we should receive and consider even those supplemental materials. I think anything short of that puts us in a very messy situation, both for further review and for the exercise of our proper authority. I would ask whether counsel have any... Hearing this conversation, have any
thoughts? I would defer, unless first to make sure nobody else on the board wants to make initial comments on this.
This is Gary Albrecht. My only comment would be that I would distinguish argument from facts, that we should receive no additional facts, but that if they want to argue why the chief misinterpreted the data that they had provided to the chief, I would listen to that, but I would not say we receive additional, for instance, affidavits from people who would say that this person was carrying large amounts of money, because that's new facts that the chief should have had a chance to look at. So arguments, I would think, is what this is talking about rather than factual information.
For clarification, Mr. Albrecht, are you referring to the additional materials submitted to the board or what happens at the hearing?
For the additional materials
okay.
submitted.
Yeah, I agree.
So, just to play this out for a minute, in that environment, the appellant, if they had absolutely like 100% new fact to submit, and they weren't able to submit, they might reply?
That would be my view, yes.
Yeah, and I believe... For the record, my name is Arthur Parker. I'm the I'm with the Office of the Attorney General, acting as the counsel to the board today. That's in fact what we are including in the orders that we have drafted thus far that have gone for final decisions, where the board has determined that the additional materials weren't before the chief. We've actually put a paragraph in to say, the board is not taking any position on the whether or not the new reasons submitted are sufficient or not. That information or that determination should be made by the chief in the first instance. It basically suggests to them go back and reapply without us telling them what to do. And so that the answer to Corazon's inquiry is yes. What we would essentially be doing is saying reapply.
I'm sorry, just for clarification, sure. Are you talking in a situation where we've recommended summary disposition or where we've remanded for further consideration or examination?
Well, I think it's more fundamental than that in the sense that Member Albrecht pointed out, the guiding principle is the board should never be in a position of considering facts that the chief never saw. Okay, and even if there's a disputed fact and you're going to have a hearing about it, it seems to me the hearing should be, that gets to be a trickier point with what Ms. Ingersoll raised, which is, should we then open up additional affidavits and things on that particular point as a matter of efficiency?
Right.
But it's still not the board's discretion. I mean, ultimately, if the applicant had supplemented his application with that further information, the chief might already have decided to grant the license. The thing that we don't want to be in this circumstance is making those initial discretionary determinations. I think you want to be in a position of either having a hearing on facts saying there's a dispute between the applicant and the chief over whether he has a mental issue that disqualifies him, or he's gotten proper treatment to rehabilitate him, or he's achieved certain amount of training that he should have or didn't, or the documentation of the proper reason in terms of the amount of money and the frequency, whether those are all kind of factual issues where you could have hearings on that. And to the extent that there's going to be testimony that comes up and they testify to something that wasn't before the chief, that's going to go into the record. It's going to be hard to unring the bell. But to solicit that in advance doesn't seem to be a proper way to deal with it. Also, as it relates to just allowing somebody to submit a perfunctory application and then turn around and submit a full application to the board, that doesn't seem to be appropriate. One of the things I wanted to point out was that this subsection F, when you read it, it's all written materials the appellant wishes the board to consider, is ambiguous. It is an ambiguous sentence, and it could mean all materials that the person could wish to submit at any time, at any place, or it could be interpreted by the board to mean all written materials the appellant wishes the board to consider, which he also had previously submitted to the chief. And what I am suggesting is that if the policy that you're establishing is what I'm hearing, that what's appropriate here is for the board, as a matter of administrative law, to interpret this rule in a way that we can then issue a guidance document. We can make a statement of interpretation that we can put up on the website that applicants can see that this is that they are not, that this is what the interpretation is, that this provision means all written materials that you wish the board to consider that you've already submitted to the chief.
I think I would say that I don't think that's a sound interpretation of the text because the rules already provide or already contemplate that the record below, if you will, the package submitted to the chief, already have been submitted and or provided to the board.
But that's provided by the chief. This is the initial request for appeal by the appellant. So the appellant may decide that certain amount of material they submitted to the chief is irrelevant or not. They want to submit certain portions of what they submitted to the chief for your consideration.
I just think that this needs to be read more literally, and that if all written materials was intended to apply only to all written materials all written materials among those previously provided to MPD in the original application, then it would say so. I think that this doesn't have that limitation.
Well, I'm suggesting it's ambiguous. You can interpret it that way. If you want to achieve what you're talking about here, if you don't interpret it that way, then it reads anything you want to give us.
Except that it says to consider at any hearing anything that the board wishes the board to consider at any hearing. And a hearing is for the limited purpose of making a determination as to a factual dispute based upon the materials submitted in the application. So it's delimited by the original application.
But it still suggests you're going to receive things that the chief never saw if you go that direction.
Well, and I'm suggesting that if the factual dispute, for example, is applicant asserts, I carry items of high value often in the city, and I swear to that, and here are a couple of examples. And the chief says, that's not sufficient. The fact in dispute is the jeopardy, in effect, that the individual is put in by carrying items of value. To reach a decision on that fact, it seems to me that the board can hear testimony by witnesses or take affidavits at a hearing in order to reach a determination on the disputed fact. So, yeah, we would be receiving additional materials on that factual dispute.
I guess I'm a little confused because if I'm thinking about your specific case, if I come and say I carry diamonds worth $100,000 on my person 3 days a week to and from work, and the chief says that's not sufficient, I would only be bringing in people from the diamond store saying she really does carry it. It's not, there's not any additional information that's going to be brought in terms of the fact. The fact is I'm saying X, the chief is saying Y, it's not sufficient. I don't know what other additional evidence you can bring in to say that it is sufficient if the chief says it's not.
Then what would be a factual dispute?
I mean, it's a dispute, but I don't think that you need additional information brought in.
But how do we reach a decision if all we have is a he said, she said, literally?
Well, it's going to be that way either. Even if I bring in an affidavit from my boss that says he really does carry, or she, I keep saying he, she really does carry $100,000 of diamonds 3 times a week, it's still a he said, she said. So I don't know that the...
Not if there are witnesses to substantiate that assertion.
So you think the MPD would be calling me a liar that I don't really carry $100,000 3 times a week?
Maybe. Or not giving it credence is a more polite way to say it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I need somebody to invite me to talk. I should not interject.
Counsel, would you please advise the board? Yes.
Then let me ask the board to consider this. If we had a chance to rewrite this rule, what would we consider to what is your because I think what could happen is you could put in the rules later on when a hearing is established, there'd be exchange of materials at that point, and that we could change this rule to suggest the materials here only deal with what was submitted to the chief, so that you're not being submitted to reviewing additional new materials at the initial request stage. And we could clarify that, but also leave open the possibility that relevant material at a factual hearing that wasn't before the chief could be submitted. I think you probably want to have some sort of allow argument about that, you know, between the chief's lawyer and the applicant or the applicant's lawyer as to whether it's relevant or not, or, you know, likely you'll let it in anyway and decide what to do with it. That's generally what administrative bodies do. They try not to get too involved in excluding things because they can consider what weight to give it, you know. But nobody wants prejudicial material to come in, particularly on the other side. Anyway, what I would suggest we could do here is go forward with a statement of policy on the board that adopts that you're not going to consider written materials submitted by the board, I mean, not submitted to the chief. You know,
in the original application,
in the discussions about whether to give a hearing or a summary disposition or a remand. In other words, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm unclear as to what you've just said.
As I understand where we are at a point right now, we now have a full board or something close to a full board that's reaffirming what we've done in these other cases, which is when there's new material in the application, new written material.
In the appeal.
I'm sorry, I keep saying application. I mean appeal. In the appeal, that was not before the chief. The board's not going to move to consider that as part of the reasons it's not going to review that factual information as a first matter. And what we've been doing is we've been saying we're in some cases we've denied the thing as a final decision, because I think what has happened is some of the new materials didn't even rise to the level of consideration. And in some other circumstances, the new materials were never before the chief at all, and so the matter was denied, and we've suggested back to the appellant that the chief may find what you've submitted appropriate. So we can move through the open meeting to something else at this point. I think we just need to make, because I think at one point what happened in the panel discussions was somebody said in the panel discussions, I don't feel we can make this interpretation for the full board. Does anybody recall that discussion? To make a determination that we're not going to consider the new materials and that we wanted to have the full board talk about that before we decided that was going to be a board policy. So I guess at this point, you need to establish the policy, and then what council can do is prepare some draft language for the rule changes to submit around to the board to consider, and then we can submit it through to the mayor's office and ask them to consider making a rule change.
So it sounds to me that what we're saying or what we're suggesting is that we're not going to consider any new materials short of a contested hearing.
Basically. Right, until they would potentially come up in a contested hearing.
Right, unless they're relevant in a contested hearing.
Right.
But I guess I just want to make sure that I'm clear about what to do at that point. So in other words, are we suggesting that we're not going to send it back to MPD as well and just focus solely on the new solely on the material that was originally submitted to MPD and make a decision based on that. So what we have done in some cases, remand it back to MPD for further consideration.
Nobody has discussed that second step, which is, if we're not going to consider the materials, are we going to, as one of the options, send the new material back for consideration to the chief?
Well, hasn't the chief just said that they're not going to entertain reviewing applications that we send back to them? I think that's something that's come up.
Not in all cases. That was with respect to the REN, they said that.
Yeah,
but there was one case.
I don't believe we've gotten a response from them yet on any of the new material ones.
Except Nucci.
Nucci.
Yeah.
Right.
But Nucci, if I may say, was a good example, I think, of what of an appropriate remand, because in that case, if for those board members who were not part of the panel, this was a case in which the applicant was denied on basis of suitability, mm-hmm. based on a criminal record. And the facts were set forth, and we remanded to the criminal record was before the board. We remanded for a more detailed explanation from MPD as to the reason why that criminal record was relevant to suitability. So there was no new material considered.
Right.
And that seems appropriate.
Right.
But to send back, to collect new material and send that new material to the chief to take into consideration is really backdooring the process, and I think is inappropriate.
And it seems to me, at least from my thinking, that you never get out of this loop. Every time you send it back and the chief reaffirms her decision, and then there's new information, a new receipt, a new affidavit, something new that the chief didn't have before her initially, if the precedent is we've got new information, you should consider it, then we never get off the loop if someone continues to give additional information. So at least from my thinking, you got, you know, two stages. The initial one, do we have a factual dispute in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that we do, when we make it to the place that we have a hearing, you decide to grant a hearing, then it seems reasonable that there would be some opportunity for an individual to provide information that further fleshes out the issue of dispute. I can see where a person could come in and have receipts or have signed affidavits that speak to things about mental health, that have things related to perhaps a mental health professional submitting information that says, look, this person's been under my care for a certain amount of time. I think this person is well-adjusted, is a person that should be able to carry a firearm, and I'm going to attest to it by providing you this information. That would be new material, and it might be relevant to the reason that she denied it in the first place. But that's just my thought. But it seems to be the best way, obviously, to direct this going forward. Obviously, in the interim, we might need to do a policy, as Art basically stated. But we might need to do something with this particular rule.
For the record, the gentleman speaking was Greg Evans,
Greg
the
Evans.
Mayor's Office of Counsel.
So, just to understand what we're discussing here, the appellant submits new information with his appeal.
Mm-hmm.
We would not consider that. And if we don't think there's a factual error, we will uphold the denial.
Well, if there are two issues. One is there a factual,
right. If there is a factual dispute
for a hearing?
Right. No,
and then
factual
if
dispute,
not,
but all
of
this new material, we say, sorry, not looking at that. Based on this, there's no dispute.
And in fairness, I think notice to the appellant has to be made, because I submit that this language, the sub F language, does make it appear that the appellant gets a second bite of that apple, and that either in the form of guidance, interpretation and guidance on the website, or a change in the language would be appropriate. As to the first option, while that's the most expedient, and we should, if we agree that this is what we should do, that should certainly be done as quickly as possible, because we have control over that. But if in fact that's the position we're taking, then I think we should seek an appropriate statutory language, because that would have a stronger effect and would be less subject to challenge and litigation in the future.
I would agree, except I think you only need to have change in regulatory language as opposed to statutory.
Right, but that's a council action as opposed to simply the board.
But, okay, to address your issue, what you would have is the scenario we've been seeing thus far has been somebody provides next to no reasons for requiring a pistol, gets denied, submits a request, and then provides all their reasons.
Yep.
In that circumstance, there was no reasons or there's nothing to there was no there's no reason to review the chief's exercise of discretion, because the chief had no discretion. Now, had they submitted an application and stated reasons, which the chief found insufficient, and in the request for appeal put in new reasons, okay, and the board determined that there were no facts in dispute, just new reasons submitted, that case would be ripe for summary disposition, because you would still have a take argument on why the exercise of the chief's discretion was or was not appropriate. It would also give the appellant an opportunity to see the material submitted by the chief, which the appellant hasn't seen yet, without going down either a summary disposition process or a hearing process.
And
does that make any sense?
Kind of, but so the summary disposition, meaning going back to the...
Summary disposition, meaning there's going to be an appeal, but there's not going to be a factual hearing. And what happens is the appellant is directed to submit written argument about why the chief was wrong. Chief gets to submit written argument about why they had a reasonable exercise of discretion. That forms the record upon which you make your final decision.
You're saying that even in the scenario of new information coming through,
if there was an original exercise of discretion by the chief, right?
Right.
You still need to review that, even though the appeal added new information which you're not going to consider. So in other words, you can't in all cases where new material is submitted automatically deny the appeal. Is what I'm suggesting.
Exactly. Right.
That's what I was trying to get at.
In no circumstance would we consider the new information.
Right.
Despite what's happening with the appeal process in the original application.
Right.
I think that seems right. I think the onus is on folks here to prove in their application that they should be a responsible carrier of a concealed handgun.
So I think that based on the discussion, I would suggest that we can issue a guidance document that says the board has considered this matter and we can leave out 1202.3F. We don't even have to make a reference to that if we don't want to. Just have to say that we are not going to consider, you're not going to consider new factual material that was
not before the chief
at the time the application was reviewed.
Mr. Parker, I would say that we do have to reference at sub F, because otherwise, I'm thinking how I, as a potential applicant, would think looking at that, and what you're saying is to clarify.
Right.
This language does not mean with new material. It simply we interpret it as referring to material, if you want to particularly proffer a part of the material that you previously submitted to.
Yes. So you are adopting what I had originally suggested then. Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. I didn't realize we were at that point. Yes. So I know how to... If the board wants to put that in some sort of a motion and vote on it, then I know how to craft that. And what I would suggest we will do is prepare a document, circulate it, and then have it signed. If you could authorize the chair to sign it, which I think she has authority to anyway, and then we could publish it on the website and also publish it in the register. Go ahead. Either that or
appeal.
When we
acknowledge receipt of the appeal.
Their appeal, after we set up the panel, we want to add an additional sentence or two?
We could, but it seems to me we're already going to... I was reading through that the sequence is, at that point, we've already gotten the new material, haven't we? When they file a request.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's probably... it's just important to have it on the website, I think, at this point, because they would be... presumably going to the website to look at our procedures and would see that statement there.
I think Ms. Maltz was referring to letting the appellant know that, to be clear, by the way, be advised that.
Yeah, I don't think that hurts. If the board wants to do that, that would certainly be an administrative, something we could do administratively that may help reduce this issue.
I just want to also point out that if we are specifically going to reference subsection F, this issue could come up again in the summary disposition process in particular 1210.2 subsection B, where it advises the appellant that he or she has 10 days from receipt of the notice to submit any written argument to the board and serve a copy on the chief concerning the existence of any material fact in dispute that would require an evidentiary hearing and the appellant's views as to why chief's exercise of the discretion denying the appellant's application was arbitrary and capricious and not supported by reliable, probable, and substantial evidence. So one may, an appellant may interpret that to mean that in making my argument and providing additional arguments with respect to material fact, that they introduce new factual evidence.
They certainly could. I mean, if particularly if you have a pro se appellant, mm-hmm. they may not distinguish between the concept of argument and evidence.
Right.
But hopefully the board can make the determination as to what gets submitted, as to what's going to be considered or excluded.
I agree that the fact that this language refers to written argument mm-hmm. is sufficient to put the individual on notice.
Okay.
So I think Mr. Parker is inviting the board to make a motion and or to consider voting on a motion. And there are really three issues. One is that a motion that council and the administrator develop guidance interpreting the board's view of 1202.3F, specifying that any additional materials provided by an appellant be limited to materials already submitted in the original application, and that any other materials submitted by the appellant will not be considered at this stage of the proceedings by the board, and that that guidance be posted on the website. And the second piece would be that language consistent with that be included in the letter from the administrator acknowledging receipt of an appellant's materials so that an appellant isn't under the impression that materials which he or she may have submitted in the course of the appeal, that initial filing of the appeal, will be considered if they were not before MPD. And then third, and perhaps to be considered separately, would be directing counsel and the administrator to develop language to amend sub F in order to make this interpretation clear and have the council consider it in an amendment to the regulation. I would think maybe we should do the first two as one motion.
Okay.
And I so move.
Second.
Seconded.
Oh. I didn't. Well, doesn't the person move?
Yes.
I moved.
Okay.
He seconded.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 It is unanimous. Given that there's a unanimous vote, then the board instructs the administrator and asks that council and the administrator develop guidance to interpret the board's view of...
Excuse me. We're not going to develop the guidance. You guys have established the guidance. We will
right.
develop the language to record your guidance interpretation.
So develop the language to record the guidance. that interprets the view of 0.3F. Specifying that the additional materials that are provided by the appellant will not be considered. Any additional material will not be considered. The board will only consider materials that were submitted by the appellant at the time of the application. And then secondly, that there is language that is included in the letter acknowledging receipt of the appeal by the appellant that is consistent with the guidance discussed.
Madam Chair, as a second motion, may I move that counsel and the administrator develop language to be further considered by the board that would make this interpretation clear on the face of the regulations themselves in sub F.
Is there a second?
That counsel and the administrator be directed to develop language then with explanation to submit to the council by way of an amendment to 1203.2.3F that would clarify, that would incorporate this interpretation into that clause.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. For the record, what the motion should be is a motion to prepare an amendment to the rules for consideration by the board, which would then be submitted. It actually goes to the mayor. The mayor has the authority to establish these rules or to promulgate the rules without going back to the council. So just so it's clear what the board is authorizing and what the steps are. So it's actually an amendment to the rules.
Mm-hmm. The movement thanks council.
Oh. Okay. No reason for you to know that.
So moved. I will next year.
Right.
So is there a second?
I'll second that one as well.
All of you
stepped out.
Oh.
We're still a quorum.
Yeah. Okay. All in favor, say aye. State your name for the record.
Aye, Gary Albright.
Aye, Alicia Washington.
Aye, Nicole Johnson.
I vote aye, Laura Ingersoll.
Given the unanimous vote, the board requests that the administrator would prepare the amendment to Rule 1202.3F to be considered by the mayor, consistent with the language as discussed, the guidance.
That should be it for the closed meeting. I mean, for the open meeting.
Yeah. Is there anything, any additional discussion during the open meeting that we want to have before we close the meeting? Prior to entering into closed session, are there any members of the public who would like to address the CPLRB? The CPLRB is a quasi-judicial body, and in accordance with our enabling statute, Section 908 of the Firearms Control Regulation Act of 1975, effective January 5, 2015, DC Act 20-564, 62 DCR 866, all hearings are confidential. Any comments received will be heard by the board, but cannot be included in the official record of any hearing conducted by this body. If there are no comments, this board may enter into a closed session in accordance with the Open Meetings Act, Section 2-575B1, in which a law or court order requires that the CPLRB proceedings be closed to the public. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The record reflects that the following board members have voted in favor of entering into a closed session.
Oh, are we supposed to stop?